Accession number 19022, Reel 3.
Donald Scrimgeour, Reel 3.
We galloped across the track and threw ourselves down, and we were laid facing each other, and we were trying to get our breath back, when a bullet shot between us, between our faces, and we just looked at each other, got up, and ran like blazes round this hill. It certainly put a move on us. We found some wind from somewhere to run. But as for actual fighting, I don't know, but that sticks in my mind as that, the way we galloped around that hill. And after that, we didn't do anything. We just sort of moved up past Naples and sort of progressed along Route 6 up to places like Capua, Minterno, but along the, what would it be?
The west coast.
The west side of Italy. Up towards the Ripido and the Grigliano. And there was just, it was during the winter, it was just going into the line, and because things were fairly static, and coming out for a few days rest, and going back again. Oh, and then there was Monte Camino. And that was very unpleasant.
Camino?
Camino. And it was a high mountain that we had to climb. And there's a village called Calibrito at the bottom of Monte Camino, which the battalion had to take before they went up Camino.
Why was it so bad there?
Weather conditions, cold, rain, exposure, lack of hot food, which you felt because of the conditions. And we got up to the top there, and for some tactical reason, we had to come down again. But it was a very unpleasant place for mortars and shells because of the rocks. You not only got the shells and mortar bombs exploding, but the splintered the rocks, and the rock fragments could do as much damage as what the shell fragments could do. And we had to come down again, and then we had to, it was taken a second time, was Camino, by us again. But it's the first time I've seen mortar bombs in flight. We were up near the summit of the mountain, and the Germans were just down below, and their mortar bombs were aimed to go over the summit top and down. And as they reached the height of their trajectory, you could see them turning over in the air to come down again. It's the first time I've ever seen that. Well, it's the first time I've ever been at the top of the trajectory of a mortar bomb, I suppose. But that was an experience.
Were you having any contact with Italian civilians?
No, not really, no. because in these villages they'd gone before we got there, generally. They'd just left their fleas behind. Everywhere you went there was fleas in Italy. And when we came back from Camino, they took us down to a place at somewhere near Naples where there was a large swimming bath. And we stood at one end of the bath and got all our personal possessions out of our pockets, uniforms and things, put them in a bag. And then we took all our underclothes and uniform off and dropped them at the end of the bath. And we got into this big swimming bath and got washed and bathed. And came out at the other end, and there was all clean clothes waiting for us to put on after we'd got dried off. And that was something that was well organised, something that was appreciated, wasn't it? So we hadn't washed for days.
And then, what happened next?
The battalion went across to the east coast, to Rio Negro. We relieved the Poles across there. But it was only a sort of a holding position while we were there. And nothing interesting happened. And then we came back just before the Battle of Cassino. And we were in front of Cassino, looking at the casino itself and Monte Cassino, and we were not in the actual casino battle, but we had been transferred from the 56th Division to the 6th South African Armoured Division at the Guards Brigade. And when Cassino fell, we went straight through, and we took a hill to the east of Cassino, just beyond the monastery. We took a hill there, but there was not much action there. And then we came down again, and we progressed slowly along Route 6 towards Rome. And just one amusing thing, we were marching along the road, this particular road, and there was supposed to be, the odd spandau machine gun post, and that just to hinder the advancing Fifth Army. And there was a farmhouse in front of us about 100 yards away. And Italian farmhouses, they have their livestock on the ground floor and the living quarters on the next floor, the first floor, with an outside steps to get to the living quarters. And we saw two Germans come out of the living quarters, down the steps and onto a German motorbike and sidecar. And the fellows in this section let go with everything they had at a distance of 100 yards, and everything missed. These fellows steamed away on their motorbikes and sidecars, and we couldn't hit them, like missing the proverbial barn door. And I've often thought since that German, he could be back in his pub in his little German town, and he'll be telling his friends all about this incident, and they'll be saying to themselves, "Lying devil." And nobody will believe him.
This is near Rome, was it?
On the road to Rome, yes. Mm. Yeah. Then we went through Rome, and progressed again through various villages. Prato, up to Florence, and we were on the Arno. We were on one side of the Arno, and the Germans were on the other. And we did a patrol there across the Arno, waded it, and shot up a transport, some transport vehicles. Horses and carts with, that the Germans were using. Operation Peach, I think it was called. I don't know, I remember these things 50 odd years ago. And that was an interesting place. And then we made our way up towards Bologna. And I left the battalion in October 44.
Why did you leave it?
It was suggested to me by my company commander that I'd considered applying for a commission. And after giving it some thought, I applied for a commission.
And where were you trained to be an officer?
I was interviewed by the battalion commander, who was Lieutenant Colonel Sir George Burns. Then I was interviewed by the brigade commander. And then I had to go to a selection board just south of Naples, which at a place called Castel de Mar, which was about 4 or 5 days by train. And we travelled in cattle trucks, and our cooking utensils was a metal sheet on the floor of this cattle truck and two biscuit tins. One to hold petrol for the fire and one to hold whatever we're cooking. But we're a bit short of rations. And can they still do me now? Because I broke into a depot, a food depot, and got a sandbag full of tea, a sandbag full of sugar and various foodstuffs, and got them back to this cattle truck. And there was about 6 or 7 of us travelling south to make our rations up, you see. I suppose they could still do me for it now, couldn't they? And went down to this war of selection board at Castle de Mar. And the selection board took 4 days. And I looked on it as a holiday because I didn't think my prospects were very bright. Because I'd left a little village school at the age of 14, and that was my education. And so it was a 4 days holiday for me, and I sat there making sure that square pegs went into square holes as one of their tests, and giving instantaneous replies to various pictures which they flashed on the wall, and I had to tell them the first thing that came into my mind. And then the like a physical examination, where there was a clearing in a wood with really tall trees in it, and from one tree they had suspended a long rope, and on a tree at each side they'd built halfway up a wooden platform round the trunk of each tree. And what you had to do, you climbed one tree, stood on this platform, took hold of the rope, and you had to swing across the clearing to this other tree. If you let go of the rope at the right time, you landed quite comfortably on the opposite platform. But if you got the wind up and hung on too long, you crashed straight into the tree. And that was one of the tests. Another test was a high pole fence, about 6 foot high, with an apron of barbed wire at each side. And you had to walk across this pole with the barbed wire apron at each side of you. And that was another of the tests. And there are various tests of a similar nature. And at the end of the 4 days, I'd told I'd passed. But what amazed me, and I still can't understand it, is there was a fellow there with me. He was a corporal in the Airborne Engineers. He'd got the military medal, and he'd been at Marseilles University before the war as a student. I would have thought he was ready-made as a prospective officer, and he failed. And yet, me, a nobody, got through, and that's something I just cannot understand, and still can't.
Were they also looking for such things as evidence of gentlemanly behaviour?
Oh, yes. Oh, and we were ever so posh when we were having our meals. Oh, passing the salt and pepper to each other. Oh, you know, there was nothing like it. Whereas before, it used to be catch this and catch that. But, oh, we were absolutely charming to each other. And talking about subjects, we didn't talk about classical music and poetry. You've never had such knowledgeable fellas in all your life as what sat down there at those tables. But as I say, I just cannot understand why this fella failed. The only thing I could think of, there was possibly a security problem. That was the only thing I could think of, because he seemed to be ready-made, in other words, and the most pleasant chap with it, he was. And from after being told I passed, I went straight to the transit camp at Naples, and I came home from Naples to England on the what was the ship? Reina del Pacifico ship.
What was that voyage like?
Calm, lovely. No problems at all. I was going home.
And where did you return to?
I went back to the training battalion at Pairbright, where I got a mixed reception. In the sergeant's mess, nobody knew why I'd come back. And I believe they thought I might be coming back as an instructor from an active service battalion. And they were a bit apprehensive in case one of them might be losing his job. I think I put that interpretation on it. And I know the first week I was there, I was made picket sergeant, or in other words, orderly sergeant, which was a bit thick because I didn't know the routine, I didn't know anybody or anything else, but I got that job for a week, where I was up at Rivali and on the go until lights out. Anyway, from there I went to a pre-octu course at Rootham in Kent, run by the Berkshire Regiment, where I was taught how to fire a rifle and a Bren gun and taught to drill.
Presumably you knew all about it.
Well, I'd been doing it for years, but it was a pre-octu course and you had to get the basics. And from there I went to 164 Octu at Barmouth in North Wales.
What were you supposed to do there?
I was just a cadet there. You lost your rank and became a cadet.
What type of things were they teaching you?
Basically, military training and tactics. to include a rank above one that you would hold. So if you were successful and became an officer and a lieutenant as a platoon commander, you were taught how to be the next step up, a company commander. So you could always fill in a rank above the one you held. And I was there, and it was...
Was this a useful course?
Very, very. It was under the command of Lieutenant Colonel Sir Paul Bryan, who was later a Member of Parliament in this area. And, yes, it was a good course. Very enjoyable. And I was in the boxing team. I was in the rugby team. Yeah. You'd do anything. You know, not much character, really, I suppose. I ought to have been dropped for lack of character, because I did well on the course, though, because the last week of the course, which was a 16-week course, was every cadet was given tests, and they were each given a rank. They were going to be a sergeant, or they were going to be a lieutenant, or they were going to be a company commander. And you were given all sorts of situations. And there was about 30 of you on it, and you had the week for all these various tests. And as the week went on, the brighter pupils were being kept back. It was the average and the not so average who started the week off. And as the week went on, if you hadn't been called or given a specific job, you knew you were doing all right. And so I got through to the Friday, and my job was company commander for Defended River Crossing at night, which is not one of the easiest things to prepare and that sort of thing. And so consequently, I was going to be prospective belt, what they call belt cadet. And it was at a lake. I don't know whether it was Lake Balla or not. And my company were in the little canvas boats to do this river crossing at night, and I'd done all the required things. I'd laid the smoke on and everything. And a boat, I was on the shore, and there was the boat set off, and one of the boats in front of me got on a low submerged rock just below the surface of the water. And they were there paddling furiously and going nowhere, because they were rocking backwards and forwards on this rock. And I dashed out and pushed them off. And I was later told that's what I'd failed on. I should have delegated somebody else to run out and push them off, not me as company commander. Anyway, before that time, you were told you had to submit a list of regiments that you would like to be sent to, if you were lucky enough to be commissioned. And you had a choice of, you had three choices. And I put the Parachute Regiment, the East Yorkshire Regiment, and the Green Howards.
Why did you put the Paras first?
Half a crown a day extra. Oh, I was full of high ideals. And you had a special medical exam for the paras, and I failed it because they told me I had a perforated eardrum. And so I was commissioned in the East Yorks. And I didn't even realise I'd got a perforated eardrum. But then, on looking back, I was once sat on a tank that went over a mine which exploded. And I think probably the blast or something could have perforated my eardrum, and I hadn't realised it at the time. From there I was sent to the East Yorks.
Where were they?
I was first sent to the depot at Richmond in North Yorkshire, and then I was sent to the 5th Battalion East Yorks at Malton, and they were just being ready to be sent to Egypt.
What month have we reached now?
Be November 45. And I went out with the 5th East Yorks to Egypt at forgotten the place of the name now.
In the canal zone?
In the canal zone, yes. It's on the side of the Bitter Lakes. Oh, Ismailia. There is Malia. And we're just in position there for a few months. And I started getting sent away from the battalion for different things. My company commander, who spent a lot of time away from the battalion because he liked to look on the wine when it was red. I was acting company commander.
Which company was this?
B Company, 5th East Yorks. I was sent as acting company commander with my company to Cairo to do guards on the British Embassy, GHQ, and the bank. I don't know what bank it was now, I can't remember. But we did these three guards, and that's all the company had to do. And I thought possibly I'd been sent there with being an ex-guardsman and having some idea of the routine of these things. I put it down to that. And we were stationed at Abbasiyah Barracks and had quite a pleasant time there in Cairo. And came back, and then the battalion got sent to Austria.
What was the attitude of the Egyptians towards you at that time?
Very standoffish. And I always went armed in Cairo. Nothing openly hostile or anything like that. But there were... you had to be careful. Careful where you went. No, we went to Austria.
This is the whole battalion?
The whole battalion. And to a place called Mertzschlag, I think it was, near Graz. And from there, I personally got sent to be a liaison officer with a Russian military mission in the British zone. And this Russian military mission consisted of a lieutenant colonel, two majors, and a private. And their purpose was to